Big thanks to Roz, Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, October 21st and you're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
And coming up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock, where Beto Da Silva will be back in his usual spot. Alan Cawley will have the floor to himself because Stephen Kelly is stuck on a ferry somewhere across the Irish Sea. He'll look back at the Premier League and, of course, what happened in the domestic leagues on Friday night. In rugby, Michael Cochran will catch up with RG Snyman, who's absolutely flying with Leinster. And Stephen Ferris has his day on the weekend's URC action. Then in Gaelic football, Connacht's Diarmaid Murtagh will join us fresh from Croke Park with his view on the proposed new rule changes.
And as well as all of that, we'll hear from Pearl Slattery and Rachel Graham after Shelburne's FAI Cup win in Talla on Sunday. Ruby also rounds up all the weekend's racing highlights. As always, if you want to have your say on any of the above or anything else besides, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening, Ruby Walsh. How are you?
I'm absolutely wonderful, Shane Dawson.
Good. Great to hear. Alan Cawley is with us, as is tradition of a Monday, Al. How are you?
Evening, Shane. Evening, Ruby. I'm absolutely wonderful myself.
And good.
The floor to myself.
The floor. You're not stuck in a ferry.
Are you sure about this? Are you sure about this now?
You and soccer. No one else's opinion. Just you.
I love it.
You must
it.
Be
I love
delighted
it.
With yourself.
It's kind of the way when I'm talking about football, it's the way I feel. Anyway, it's my opinion and no one else's.
I was going to say, when I'm sat at home talking to myself about, geez, that was a good VAR decision. Was it, Al? Yeah, it was.
Many's a discussion I've had like that, Shane.
You get worried when you start answering yourself back.
Like the famous scene in The Commitments was a Jimmy Rabbit getting interviewed by Kerry Wogan. Many's a moment I've had like that, Shane.
Oh, yeah. Shane Dawson, we might as well start with you. Come on.
Yeah. It's
one
on.
Down, two to go.
Two to go.
What is your sporting highlight? It surely goes back to Friday night.
Do you know what? I had a couple of genuine sporting highs. Obviously, seeing Shelburne score three goals for the first time this season was a welcomed weekend highlight, and still being in contention for the League of Ireland title. And also, not just because it's Shelburne related, but the FAI Cup. I know it was quite a one-sided match, 6-1, an absolute bizarre first 45 minutes. But for the likes of not just Shelburne stalwarts, but for players in the League of Ireland, the Women's Premier Division, and back when it was the Women's National League, the likes of Noelle Murray, Rachel Graham, Pearl Slattery, winning an FAI Cup after a tough season, missing out in the league was bitter disappointment to Athlone, and obviously lots of narratives, and then last year's Cup Final losing on penalties and so on and so forth. So to see players like that lift the trophy was brilliant. Pearl actually got Rachel to lift the trophy with her as well, and we'll hear from the two players very shortly. Even Kate Mooney coming back had a toughish time in Scotland as well, only in her mid-20s, so plenty of years left there for Kate Mooney to come back banging form, getting two goals. So really nice little narratives for players who've devoted a lot of time to the league as well. And also Larry Gillespie is my left of field one in the UCI World Track Championships as well. She got a bronze medal, her first senior World Championships, and she came fifth in the elimination race, top 10 finishes in the Madison and Omnium as well. So for Team Ireland, it was a good weekend. Four top 10 finishes, a senior debut as well for Lucy Benazé-Mins as well. So Lara is certainly one to watch for future Olympics and everything else. So yeah, that was brilliant as well. You were at Ascot, Ruby, with that centre around your sporting highlight, or is it elsewhere?
I was, Shane. Obviously it's Champions Day at Ascot, where of course the Royal Meeting is held in June. The place was covered in Union Jacks, yet Kyprios flew the Irish flag to become the dominant stayer this season, and Aidan O'Brien was crowned champion trainer, Oisin Murphy crowned Irish or a champion jockey. So there might have been plenty of Union Jacks around, but the tricolour was definitely swinging in the background. Great day's racing. Real good finish to the Champion Stakes, and Matt Jim Crowley eventually getting up, and what was a dramatic contest, but good entertainment to watch. My highlight actually came this morning when I realised Cawley was on after I'd watched all the soccer at the weekend, and I just saw how good VAR was. He's 2 years telling us he shouldn't be in soccer, it doesn't work, and then you watch the weekend and you thought, that's what it's meant to do.
We will have a juicy conversation in a few minutes, Ruby, about this.
Our soccer conversation starts at approximately 18:25, I believe that's probably going to take a good solid 5 to 10 minutes. Will just be Ruby ribbing you on VAR, I'd imagine.
I would imagine. I actually just want to ask Ruby on that about Ascot, Ruby, Calandigan, and I'm always wondering about I listened to the jockey's comments in the build up to the race, and he said he felt it was a really special horse, brilliant jockey as well. But when you fall out of the stalls in the manner that he did, where is your head at in terms of your decision making to try and make up the ground, or at what point do you go, or is it panic stations?
Race riding is the same as every other sport, and any sports person's decisions when the game is on is reactionary, and it's whether your reactions are right or your reactions are wrong. Now, when Calandigan fell out of the stalls, Stefan Pasquier looked up. The horse drawn in two was Royal Rhyme. I think he hadn't come into to Stefan's position, I suppose, so he booted forward and tried to regain the position that he was hoping to get initially. Now, he did get there, but he had to use too much petrol to get into that pocket. So I would say, if you said to him afterwards, would you like another go at that? Of course he would. He actually should have reacted the other way. He should have gone back out and took his medicine straight away. But when you react, sometimes you react right, sometimes you react wrong. And he just, I'd say it was the wrong call. But you only have a hundredth of a second to make up your mind. It's a reaction. It's not a decision. And to me, it was the wrong reaction.
Yeah, because he was so close then in the end. And I often wonder about that, and over the years watching the race, and I always wonder about jockeys that are on the best horses, sometimes they sit too far back, then you're on about the one who's too far forward. But you're saying he basically should have took his medicine, held his position and waited maybe for the end to have a right go.
Yeah, that's look, on reflection, and it's all reactions. It's the same thing. Why didn't the player make that pass? How come he couldn't see that player in space over there? It's all about the reactions, Alan. You did it, and sometimes you react right and sometimes you react wrong. And when you make it wrong, it's not a decision. That's what I'm trying to say. It's just how you react.
Instinct.
The reaction should have been instantly went, no, take my medicine now and we'll suffer the consequences.
That's very interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Oisin Murphy, champion jockey for a fourth time, but he's yet to make a decision on 2025. I know he's going to Doncaster this weekend, but...
Yeah, I suppose when you say make a decision, it's whether he's going to go all out for the title or is he going to start trying to chase bigger winners, I suppose, at bigger race meetings. Like William Buick did that this year, but that was the nature of William Buick's job with Godolphin. Godolphin had a lot of older horses that raced typically in America, and William spent a good few Saturdays away in America rather than being in the UK. And, you know, it's a limited season in the UK for the championship. It doesn't... Even though the season runs pretty much all year round, the champion jockey's title is decided from March until now, even though the racing still goes on for another month or 6 weeks. So, whether Rushing decides he's going to go hammer and tongs after a fifth championship, or he's going to try and upgrade the horse he's riding. And that's a difficult enough thing to do too, because there's only a certain amount of good horses, and getting the job to ride those horses is not easy.
Okay. Speaking of big decisions of a different kind, Graham Mulcahy, after 16 seasons as Limerick senior hurler, has called time in his inter-county career. The corner forward was part of the side that ended a 45-year wait for All-Ireland success in 2018 and went on to win four more Celtic Crosses as well as seven Munster titles. The 34-year-old made his senior treaty debut against Kilkenny in the 2009 league campaign. He was a regular in the side for the provincial win against Cork in 2013, a season where he was nominated for an All-Star, and he was recognised with said award in 2018, and this after contributing to Limerick's long-awaited Liam McCarthy success with a tally of 1-2 in the final against Galway for his club Kilmallock. Mulcahy notched up four county titles and a provincial medal. Speaking of county titles, actually, friend of the show, Austin O'Malley, managing Coolah to their first ever Dublin Senior Football Championship title. I think they're the 29th team, I think I read somewhere, to win a Dublin title. So Austin was unavailable today to take a call.
I wonder why. So, I may enjoy every moment, because I watched a good bit of it yesterday, and when you consider their star player was sent off as well, Shane, towards the end, Conn O'Callaghan, a brilliant, brilliant result, and fair play to Austin.
Mick Fitz, I think, man of the match as well, the old worker.
It was close to be my highlight, but it's kind of linked in Shelburne winning Friday night, just purely because the pressure that they've been under, can't buy a win, still hanging in at the top, and the game wasn't the best by any means. It was actually really poor, I felt, the game on Friday night, but nobody will care in a few weeks if they go on to lift the title, and it's all about just getting over the line now. Nobody cares about performances, and I thought it was massive for them just with what's coming up in the next 2 weeks, and that could really galvanise them for the two big games that come. And my other one was Saturday night. I was watching the GAA with the new rules, and it was the first time I watched a Gaelic football match in years and actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was brilliant.
Why is that?
Because I've kind of veered more towards the hurling in recent times, like a lot of people, I would say. And I think Gaelic football, and I've said it many times, for a number of reasons. One is the provincial championships, I think, is a major hindrance to the game itself. And I also think then when you look at the approach of so many teams with the blanket defences and stifling players and stifling all the good things that we want to see in any sport, the flair players, players taking shots, players scoring points, all the good things about what you see in any game. I just think it's in a really, really bad place. And for Jim Gavin and the rules committee to get together and put together what I felt was really, really real major improvements on the game, Shane, when I watched it, and the space that was available. And I know Croke Park's a big pitch anyway, but just simple little things like the tree staying in, at the back, and all of a sudden it becomes a contest with maybe 3v3, like an old school Gaelic match where it was me against you, man on man. I thought it was brilliant, and I think the flair players will flourish in that environment. They may not get them all through, but I just thought there was major enhancements to the game. And I'd be honestly, I think that they'd be crazy not to put at least 3 or 4 of them through.
Look, we'll get the opinion of Dermot Murta in a minute, but to me, Alan, with the 3v3 and the space they've created, it's surely going to encourage people to move the ball faster. And surely that's the hope.
And that was even watching the game, Ruby. It was actually a game. It was up and down and end to end. And obviously, there's going to, once coaches get a handle on the rules, they might coach it a little bit differently. Where there is, I think the second night, I was listening to a couple of the players' interviews, and particularly the Ulster lads said they had spoken about it not being as much end to end and a bit of basketball kind of type match, that they were holding on to the ball a little bit longer. And that will come into it as well. But certainly, in terms of the phrase that everybody uses now in soccer terms, is the transition, Ruby, and exactly that in Gaelic. Once the ball is turned over, if you're able to kick a pass, and you should be able at intercounty level, 40-50 yards straight into a full forward or a centre half forward, or like the old days, and be a 3v3 situation, it can only help the game.
We were going to take an ad break, and we will hear from Pearl Cycling Rachel Graham a little bit later in our association football chat. But Dermot Murta actually is on the line, Connacht and Roscommon Gaelic footballer, who perhaps was listening to Alan Cawley's comments there. Dermot, I'm not sure if you heard what Alan's opinion on it was. Obviously, you were in the thick of it over the course of the weekend. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, hi lads. I was listening away there. Some interesting comments, and I suppose the one that springs to mind is the 3v3. It's a very interesting one. I actually think that rule alone will probably change the game. It encourages kicking, encourages one-to-one defending, one-to-one attacking. And I suppose you probably will get a stage in games where teams will try to keep the ball, because it's just hard to keep that pace going up and down the field for 70 minutes. So I think you will get stages. It probably will be frustrating times where a team will keep the ball in the opposition half and then kind of kill the clock until the buzzer, like what Ulster did against us the other night. When they have a player like Niall Morgan in the ranks, it can be very difficult to get the ball back off them when they're in your half. But I think overall, I think that's a very encouraging rule. And I suppose there's so much space. It's not 15 against 15 inside the 45 now. So it actually makes the game more exciting. It's actually difficult to keep the ball because you're always in a 1v1 situation. So you're encouraged to take on your man. And if you don't, that man will always be pushing up on you and trying to take the ball off you. So I think that's a really encouraging rule going off the games at the weekend anyways.
Was it more enjoyable game overall to play as a player? Like what was were you calling for change beforehand, or perhaps when you see all of these proposed rule changes, were you somewhat hesitant even before taking part?
Well, I think nobody really likes change because you have to adapt to it. And I suppose the game has evolved a lot, and I think teams have tried to evolve with that. And if we feel like, say, especially in Roscommon, we're only getting to know the way the game has been played at the moment. But no, I think the most important thing is the supporters. If supporters aren't happy with the rules, you're going to have small crowds at games, which makes it more difficult to players to flourish because there's a dead atmosphere. So I think once supporters need change, that's the most important thing. And so I think change is important. As I said, I wasn't really on for it at the start, but now after playing at the weekend, now I do feel like that Interpro series, if it was the rules were as normal, I think it still would have been exciting, because no teams would have went too deep into the tactics, because we're running it together for maybe a week or two. So I do think it would have been decent games at the weekend anyways, but I do think further down the line that these rules are going to bring nice changes to games. And as I said, like, when you're have a lot of one-to-one battles, like, that's the kind of chaos that supporters want to see, and it's the chaos players want to be playing in as well. So I think down the line it's going to be very encouraging, and I suppose you'll only really know in the National League when it starts if some of these rules come true, how it comes into play.
As you said there, Jeremy, just about the game evolving, and every game evolves, and you're only adapting, certainly in Roscommon, to the current, I suppose, approach from a lot of teams. But I don't think, as a punter, and all I am is a punter, it's only my opinion, I'm watching the games, and I would have grown up playing Gaelic football, and I'm a big fan of Gaelic football, but I don't think the game of Gaelic football has evolved for the better. And that's been a major problem, I think, from the outside and people looking in. And whereas what I watched on Saturday night is absolutely for the better of the game, a more entertaining spectacle, and for the players as well to flourish in that environment.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. I don't think the game has evolved for the better. Now, I do think, like, players have become more athletic in different positions. Even your corner forwards now are a lot more aerobically fit. But I don't think myself it has evolved for the better. But I suppose all teams had to change with the way the game was going, or else they would have been left behind. So that's why players and teams and managers probably got used to the current system. But look, it's going to be a great challenge to see which team adapts best to the new rules. And I really hope some of them come in, because the team that adapts the better is going to win the All-Ireland or win provincial titles and league titles. So it can only make it more exciting. And look, the feedback was positive over the weekend, and look, that means we're going to get bigger crowds at games. You just have to change. You have to go along with it. Like, everything in life changes at some stage, so why can't GAA change as well?
That is the big question, and I think the key there was what you said, and you hope that some of them come in. Change is change. This has to go in front of a lot of people to get over the line, so you're not going to get all seven. If
no,
I said to you, pick three, maybe four, that will make the biggest difference, what would you go for?
Well, I think, first of all, the 3v3 is definitely a big one. Now, I do think maybe at a club level down the line, it might be a struggle with the officials to officiate that, because, say, in Croke Park the other night, there may be four or five men with umpires, linesmen, four officials able to help the referees. So I think that might be a struggle down the line, but I think that's a really, really positive one. I actually enjoy the solo and go. I think it keeps the tempo in the game, and you know, like, it can create a bit of chaos within a game as well, where someone solos and goes and then everyone has to react to that. I like as well the kick out from that has to go outside the arc. I think it's a really good one, because even if a team goes short, it's still a risky short ball, but also players can't go back to the keeper, so it really encourages teams to press high up the field, and then it kind of tests that skill set that maybe defenders in recent years mightn't have been under that much pressure coming out with the ball, because teams are dropping off them, but now we'll encourage teams to push right up on them and test their skills to the limit. So I think there are three that's important. I think the other ones, like, say, the mark rule, for example, I think that's one that it probably won't be used a whole pile, because I think the game is more naturally open now with 11v11 inside the half. So I think players will always kind of go for the juggler if they're on the ball in 1v1. So, like, if that comes in, I don't think it'll make a positive impact, or I don't think it'll take a negative impact. I probably will be a small bit concerned about the disciplinary rules. That's probably the one area where they might need a slight little change. Now, I'm all for punishing dissent from players. I think refs have a really difficult job, and anyone who's say at the refs should be punished for that. But I do think maybe it happened to us the other night, where one of the lads, and David Gold, the ref, fantastic referee, he was only going by the rules, where one of our players was caught for overcarrying, and he put the ball on the ground, but he was supposed to hand the ball back to the player. I think that's, you know, it's a bit, I don't know, I wouldn't be gone on that, because players get heightened in the game. Like, our player just found the ball to go back and mark a man, and next thing the player with the ball is running out by him, and it's scoreable free, and this was on our attacking 45. So there's a few small little tweaks like that, but I do think the FRC have really brought a good feel back to football, even though the rules haven't even been brought in yet. So, but them three rules, I said, at the first is probably the ones I definitely go with, and maybe a few tweaks with the disciplinary side of things, because I think the red card now as well, if someone gives a high tackle, it can result in a red card, and like players do that as well. They get tired, make mistakes. They might tackle someone up high. Someone might throw the arm back and swing the head into the air. Next thing, that's a red card, and it's probably a small bit harsh. So we just don't want, like, say, a player's play acting off that too. If there is disciplinary rules, like, say, running into the back of someone when they win a free, when the player isn't looking, and then that's brought 50 metres forward. So some of them can be quite harsh, but I think the overall playing rules should bring a positive outlook to our game.
I don't want to be too negative, but just kind of two questions, I suppose, for you, Dermot. Excuse me. Do you think the 4 points for a goal might mean matches are settled a bit earlier if they're one-sided contests? And then also, even say the likes of 3v3 and about reffing that as well, and even marking pitches, is there a fear that this might create a bit of a divide between club players and county players and club teams and the inter-county scene?
Yeah, a small bit now. It's just, I suppose, if clubs and counties are given more resources, it might help with that. But I agree there with the 4 point for a goal. I don't think there's need for that, because I think there's naturally going to be more goal chances now anyways. So like the 3v3 gives us more goal chances. So I don't think, because it can, like a game's, what my worry would be if the 4 point for a goal stays in is that when there is a team maybe playing a so-called better team, like if that team runs in 2 goals early on, like it's 8-0 and it's demoralising, you know, and like it's, that could be very difficult for a team. I know it's only 2 points extra, that, but mentally it's more demoralising than say conceding 2 goals that are worth 3 points. So that'd be one I would be a small bit concerned about, that you could have games over very early, and then you kind of, everyone's going back to saying, oh, it's boring and it's over as a contest. So that would be one I'd be worried about. But yeah, of course, but I suppose if, you know, you're saying there about like with clubs and counties, like if these rules make the game better, I think everyone just has to adapt, and that'll be it. And we'll figure it out as we go. And as I said, if we're getting more viewers and more people at games and more young kids enjoying playing football and, you know, learning the right things when they're younger, that they're not going to be learning to be playing as a sweeper when they're under 10. I think that can only be a positive.
That's a big positive, Jeremy.
We'll get rid of that. No. All 7 rules, I think, follow each other as well. So they are intertwined and interlinked somewhat, yeah, as well. I think, yeah, Jim Gavin.
The FRC have given themselves room here for the negotiation too.
Oh no, definitely.
4 points for a goal, the 1v1 throw-in. There's a few they can give away here to keep the ones they want. Well,
it's far from black and white. Listen, Dermot, before we let you go as well, just away from the rails, was it nice togging out for Connacht in the old Railway Cup, getting an airing again?
It was unbelievable. I was just saying to someone today, I think it should happen every year. Like, you know, we met up last Tuesday as a Connacht team, and you know, you're in a team meeting room against lads there that you're probably plotting to beat in about 3 months' time. You know, it's a really nice feeling. It's a bit surreal, and you know, going out and playing with them in Croke Park and having some of them great players on your team instead of against you was really nice. And then kind of you get that competitive edge, that bit of pride comes into it too, that this is your province and you want to do well. I just thought it was really good, and we had a great weekend together up here in Dublin. So I think it's something that should be encouraged every year, because it doesn't take an awful lot out of players. And look, some players are injured, some players are away, some players are still with their club. There's lots of players in each province at a serious quality to still have the relevance of the, say, or bring back the relevance of the Railway Cup. So yeah, it was something I really enjoyed now, and I really hope that it comes in again next year and for the future.
Well, I love the way you say we're still up here in Dublin, Dermot. That's always a good sign. Thanks a million for taking our call. We have a quick break to take.
No problem.
Now, a thoroughly enjoyable chat with Dermot Murta means we've ripped up the running order. So we're going to circle back to our weekend sporting highlights, and of course Shelburne lifting the Women's FAI Cup, the Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup, for the third time in their history as a club. I know Rohini lifted a couple of trophies as well in their day, but Per Slattery and Rachel Graham, two Shelburne legends. Again, similar to Austin O'Malley, who, actually, breaking news, Ruby, Austin O'Malley will be joining us in studio tomorrow unavailable today, as we mentioned earlier. He's enjoying himself. But Austin O'Malley will be in studio tomorrow reflecting on that big win. Similar to Austin O'Malley, no Shelburne player was available to take a call today. I wonder why. But yesterday, I spoke to Pearl Slattery and Rachel Graham on that win.
Yeah, we're delighted. We spoke all week and today really about our performance. It was always going to be about us, and honestly, in a million years, no matter what team at Loughborough put out, that cup wasn't going back there. We had a real motivation. We felt the heart of it last year, and like, even the route to the final was tough, do you know what I mean? And we've got here, and that's what it was about, just one more game for us. And I mean, what a performance by everybody. We're just buzzing, really.
Yeah, look, we've obviously had the hurt from last year. Like, that really stuck with us for, like, all this year, basically. And then to lose the league, there's no way we weren't coming away with that trophy. But I just want to give a special mention to Pearl, because during the week she said, if we lift that cup, you're coming up to lift it with me. So, look, that means a lot to me, and I just want Pearl to know that.
You've played in so many matches for the club. Have you ever played in such a bizarre and wild first half where just everything seemed to click?
No, and, like, what was it, 6-1 at half-time? Like, that was madness.
We're all kind of looking at each other thinking, what's going on? Even at half-time, but I think we had to bring everyone back down to earth and think,
was that difficult just to kind of start again, refocus?
Yeah, I just think after the fourth goal and we're celebrating, you know, everyone's looking at each other going, what's going on here? And then you get in and we're all obviously buzzing, but Owen was very good and myself and a few others said, look, you know, it's not over yet, you know, and you're just thinking, could that happen for them in the second half? So you just need to settle everybody and said, look, last 4 to 5 minutes of the season, give it everything, and we did, and obviously delighted now. Look, it's all the staff collective. We're nothing without it. We don't get to train or play every week without all them. It's a massive effort, and look, to see where the lads are, us to win a cup, you'd love to see the lads now go and win it, and, you know, great times ahead for Shells, hopefully.
Hopefully great times ahead for Shells. Alan Colley, let's just box off for League of Ireland chat. Paul Carey will be with us tomorrow with Mark Langdon as well, so we might reflect more on the title race because we do have a lot of Premier League to get through today as well, which I'm aware of. I know Ruby needs to speak about VAR for the guts of 7 or 8 minutes as well. So, Alan, a big night on Friday. Obviously, massive congratulations to the Shells women's team yesterday. But on Friday, Shells 3-1, Derry 2-0. A late goal, a late cracker of a goal by Dylan Watts for Rovers as well. Pat's beaten Galway and then both picked up a win. Way to Sligo on Saturday as well. So, do you honestly feel Shells are still in the driving seat? I know, like, you look at the table, they're 2 points clear and it's in their hands, but I don't know, I still have that sneaking feeling about Rovers and goal difference.
Yeah, I think Friday was just huge for them, Shane, just because they haven't, it was 1-10 and everybody was going back to that stat, and I'd say they were sick to the teeth of listening to it. So I think it was huge just to get that monkey off their back and get a win, because it was much needed, not just obviously for the league title, but just to, I suppose, going into the last 2 or 3 games, that they had a win and they had a victory. They made hard work of it, but ultimately the most important thing, as I say, at this stage, they got the win. And it was huge for them. I tipped Charmer Rovers probably 3-4 weeks ago just because of the running, and I'm not veering away from that, even though Shelburne are 2 points clear. But I do think that victory will have a big impact, because I think they'll win Friday, Shelburne, and then it'll come down to that last game. And then, as everybody had said all along, if you were to say to Damien Duff that you'd be 2 points clear with 2 games to go and it'll come down to the last game, you would have snapped your hand off. You really would, Shane. And the way the fixtures are set up, Derry could lose, which I think they might, against St. Pat's, because the form St. Pat's are in on Friday. And then it's literally a draw could do them potentially, maybe.
No, a draw would. So if Derry drop points on Friday and Shells beat Drogheda, who Drogheda have an eye on a cup final and a playoff as well, because they are going to finish in 9th place. There's no other result for Drogheda United. So if Shells beat them, if Derry drop points to Pat's, and Pat's have been on an absolutely unbelievable run of form, then Rovers have to win. If Rovers don't win, Shells are League of Ireland champions Sunday evening.
So yeah, like, I suppose you started the chat about them being in pole position. Absolutely they're in pole position, but just because of, I suppose, the 2 games that are left on paper.
It is Dundalk away who are relegated.
Shamrock Rovers have Dundalk and Waterford at home, so of course
Alan, we'll make this conversation really simple. It's coming down to goal difference.
Yeah.
It's coming down to goal difference. If Shells and Derry draw, basically, if you're looking at that last game of the season, if Derry and Shells draw, Rovers are going to win 2 matches. It would most likely come down to goal difference, of which Shamrock Rovers are plus 13 at the moment, Shelburne are plus 11 as well, even if Shells racked up a big win on Friday.
Never mind even worrying about if they draw on Derry. If Shelburne win the 2 games, they win the league.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Tony. If we win our next 3 games, of which they've already won one,
so
Shelburne are League of Ireland champions.
Yeah, they are in pole position.
That is Damien Duff quote, by the way, in case people think I've lost myself.
It's a brilliant finish.
It is an absolutely cracking
finish.
You said it
often, it was nearly your culture, Shane, doesn't
it? It's all that's going around my head. So, Premier League, where do you want to begin, Ruby?
Where not to begin? I've listened to Alan Colley telling me for so long that VAR is so wrong, this, that and the other, and then last weekend, for the first time I'd say VAR did what it was supposed to do, and it added greatly to the entertainment.
I agree wholeheartedly with you, Ruby, on this one. Absolutely, 100%. I even said it yesterday on the radio. I thought VAR had a great weekend, going back to the Saliba. The way to handle that situation, I think it was Rob Jones. And I actually think when that incident happened, I was watching it live myself, and straight away you're thinking, last man, red card. But I actually think the ref, what he did, and purely because VAR is in place, he taught himself this is potentially a red, but I'm not going to give a red because I know how I have VAR in the back pocket to review it and look. So he gave the yellow knowing that they were going to review and look, and once he was called to the monitor, then he was sure in his mind. And I think that's good teamwork, and that's the way they should work together. And ultimately they came to the right decision, and it was handled quite quickly as well. And they got to it the same yesterday in the Liverpool match, Ruby. The referee gives the decision, he's called over to the monitor straight away. When you look at the replay, you could tell that Sanchez came out, there was a collision, but I felt he got enough of the ball, and it was overturned. So I agree totally with you, but considering you're saying one weekend in 2 years and they got it right, it's not a great strike rate, Ruby, is it?
No, but to me it was pure ego, and it was the first time that they've made it work like they do with the TMO in rugby. That's all they had to do from day one, but they wouldn't do it.
And I agree again on that with you, because I think the implementation of it over the last 2 years was what was the issue, rather than actually, I suppose, them coming up with the right and wrong decisions. And I listened to Howard Webb during the week, and it's no coincidence that I think he's probably been the best referee we've seen in a long, long time. He was a brilliant referee, Howard Webb, and now he's the head of the referees. And he basically, he was on an interview during the week that I listened to. He was brilliant, and he spoke about the improvements they've tried to make, speaking to players, speaking to managers, all the stakeholders, accepting, as you say, Ruby, when they're wrong. He has no problem whatsoever in admitting when they're wrong, when they get a decision wrong, and trying to put it right. And I think he is at the back of all the improvements that we're seeing now in the implementation of it, and long may it continue. If we see more weekends like we've seen over the weekend and it works as well as that, I'm all for it then. But unfortunately we haven't seen weekends like that.
I know, but even the argument that was made originally that the players would be able to celebrate goals or whatever. Did you watch the City players standing around waiting to see if the Stones goal was going to stand or not? And then the reaction when it did.
Oh, no, I'm not having it. That's not a positive.
Brilliant.
No, that's...
You want to celebrate
You
that
need to
moment.
Celebrate instantaneously as fans. No, I know that was brilliant.
It did, but when you're standing and you're waiting, it's like a photo finish in a race.
Yeah, it's big. It did celebrate widely.
But it
builds up even more tension, and then there's a bigger release.
Oh, but when you hear that ball just nestle into a net and just know that...
I know as a Shelburne fan, you haven't heard that much lately.
I know.
It's a common thing in most other places.
It was something similar, Ruby, with Nicholas Jackson's one. Now, more so the fans than him, because the fans went wild when he scored, and then the flag went up quite quickly.
Yeah.
So he stopped himself, but then he went wild then when it was given. So
I think you need that instantaneous release.
I still think the correct result is far more beneficial.
The City one as well, Ruby, probably because it was the last kick of the game and they knew that, hence why they went wild.
That's fair.
I think I agree with you, Ruby, and if there's more weekends like we've seen and it's implemented like that, and even I think if you go back to the Man United decision and it wasn't VAR, I think the referees have had a good weekend overall. The fourth official who was getting awful stick, but the licked, the physio and the first aid team, they should have dealt with that situation so much better. He came off three times. I was watching the match live and the blood kept pumping from his head, and it's written in the rules that if there's blood showing like that, you have to go off. And then they were trying to blame the referees when they conceded the goal, which was complete and utter nonsense.
That was their own fault. I couldn't agree more with you.
Yeah.
Should have had a big tub of Vaseline to make sure the blood stopped running out.
They should have, yeah. They should have done whatever it take, or just take him off and get a bandage on him. The old Terry Butcher.
About £4 worth of stuff.
Yeah, Terry Butcher's great. Kevin Doherty.
What about City though? Wolves having a shocker, but they made City play.
They did, and Wolves. And to be fair, Ruby, when you look at Wolves, and straight away you look at them at bottom of the table, 1 point out of 24, they've had a disastrous start, conceded 23 goals. You would straight away point to the fact that the manager must be under pressure, but not at all. They actually played really, really well for long periods in that match. Frustrated City. The fans were right behind them as well. You could see the disappointment when they conceded so late on. And if you look at Wolves, and I think Gary O'Neill is a very good manager, they've had the hardest probably series of games when you think they've played Man City, Liverpool, Villa, they lost 6 against Chelsea, they played Arsenal as well. And their fixtures that are upcoming are Brighton, Crystal Palace, Southampton, Fulham and Bournemouth. And Everton, their next 6. So I think the club are right to stick with him. The fans are right to stick with him as well, Gary O'Neill. I think he'll turn things around there because I think he's a very good manager and they gave a great account of themselves. But unfortunately, City just do what they do and win.
There's no chance of unconscious bias in that train of thought, Alan.
I thought he was wrong to say that, Gary O'Neill, to be fair.
That's fair. Okay.
I thought he was. And normally he's a little bit more measured. And if you go back to last season as well, Shane, he feels aggrieved with VAR because there was two or three penalty incidents which I felt there were penalties going against him probably 2 or 3 weeks on the trot. So I'd say some of his comments are stemming from that. But I do think, to be fair, the referees, they got it right. Bernardo Silva, he does bump up against the goalkeeper and people are suggesting that takes him away from setting his position for the header. But the header's passed him and he had a chance to save it. The header's passed him before he even knows it. So I think the referees were right in that one as well.
What about Arsenal then?
The problem with Arsenal, Ruby, is obviously the games they've dropped points in. They've had 3 sendings off and it's a bit of a disciplinary problem. Now, you might say it was a mistake and he's trying to rectify the mistake and he pulls him down, that it wasn't like a bad challenge. But it's still 3 red cards in 8 matches and that's a problem for them going down to 10 men against any team. And Bournemouth were very good. I think the other big problem for Arsenal, Ruby, is they've lost Odegaard and they're struggling to deal with the loss of him. Then they had no Saka at the weekend. So whatever about losing one, to be losing two was a major problem for them. And now they've no Saliba in the games coming up as well. And one of them is Liverpool at the weekend. So I think that's a major issue for them.
Still think they'll win the league, yeah?
Well, I've tipped them all along. I'm not one for changing. I stick to me guns, Ruby.
Even
I think Liverpool are contenders now. That's the one thing I will change.
Do they look a bit more solid? Less attractive, but a bit more solid, perhaps?
I still think they're very attractive, but more solid, Shane. Because I'm looking, they've scored 15
solid
goals.
Can be attractive.
They've scored 15 goals, the same as Arsenal. Man City have scored 19. But the big thing on the points table, if you look at the graphs there and the chart for the points, they've only conceded 3 goals. So as expansive as Klopp was and great to watch, you always felt that you would get chances against Liverpool and they would concede goals maybe or potentially. Whereas you look at Arne Slot now, they've only conceded 3 goals, so they're definitely more watertight. Yet I still think they carry the same trek going forward because of the brilliant players that they have. And I think Curtis Jones deserves a mention as well. His performance yesterday was unbelievable.
Yeah, after sleeping in the spare room.
I heard that.
That's the key.
I hope I'm not in the spare room tonight now and gave a good performance there for that.
Down at Astro.
Spurs were rampant against West Ham. Good to see Son back.
Yeah, Son's one of my favourites, Ruby. Brilliant player, and there's no better sight when he's in full flow. And they needed as well. Postecoglou, he was getting a little bit of stick. He was getting kind of people suggesting, was he getting a little bit narky in the interviews as well with some of the journalists? But I'm a big fan of him, I really am. And I think he made the decision on Saturday, which was a big call, to take off Maddison at half time. They brought on Pape Sarr because they needed that legs and energy, and the whole thing transformed and turned around. So it was a good victory.
Of all weekends, or all Mondays for Stephen Kelly to miss when Spurs have a thumping win and Arsenal lose, but however. Manchester United, I know you watched this one, Alan. Rasmus Højlund lighting up the front line now as this number 9, both on the pitch and again with on his back as well. So it was a great second half performance, and perhaps credit has to go to Erik ten Hag, because a lot of criticism has been labelled at him for making the wrong tactical decisions, but he switched it up somewhat and outflanked Thomas Frank.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, Shane, what it boiled down to, and I've seen a few comments that they've said it was just built on pure anger and frustration and annoyance, and they came out kind of all guns blazing in the second half. And he was under pressure. Well, he's not under pressure, he's under serious pressure. And everybody felt at half time, one down, here we go again, this could be the end of him. And I still feel like it will be the end of him, maybe next week, the week after. I still can't see things turning round under him. But the game was won again, and this is what they're good at, on just moments of brilliance. And they are a team that can produce moments of brilliance. Rashford's cross, Garnacho's finish, it's a moment of brilliance. Fernandez's little touch to Højlund, a moment of brilliance. But the biggest problem, and I think this is kind of indicative of Ten Hag and the culture and the problems at Man United, you look at Brentford's goal, and regardless of De Ligt being off the pitch, watch Dalot's part in that goal, Shane. It was absolutely disgraceful. Zero effort. And the problem there is,
and he's meant to be one of the lads who play his heart out.
I don't see it with him, but certainly whatever about a fella making a mistake, I've no problem. But a fella making no effort whatsoever, it was disgraceful, his token gesture to try and stop Pinnock. And that wouldn't go on under Klopp, under Guardiola, under Arne Slot, any of the top ones. And I think this manager allows that stuff to go on because it happens time after time. And that's another big problem for Ten Hag.
It most certainly is. Villa are still flying, but what about Southampton? Two up against Leicester and get beat 3-2.
I know, it was unbelievable. Some finish to the game as well. But the little lad that brought on Fatawu, what a player he's going to be.
Smashing.
Yeah, he's going to light up the Premier League, I think. The question he'd asked here is why he's not starting. Now, the manager said afterwards that he's just trying to adjust him slowly to Premier League life, but he was brilliant when he came on. But Southampton, yeah, Ruby, two up, they'll never get a better chance.
Is there an Irish angle to that? Just Aaron Ramsdale hasn't been in great form. Bazunu comes back from injury. I know Kevin Keller's getting a run of games as well at Liverpool now with Alisson out injured.
I don't think he'll dislodge Ramsdale because of the money they spent on him, Shane.
That's a fair point.
And I think whether he had Bazunu in the goals or Ramsdale in the goals
or both
or Peter Schmeichel in the goals, it's all the same to Southampton because they cough up so many chances because of it's admirable in the way he wants to play, but it's admirable in the Championship when you're the best team. It's not as admirable when you're Premier League bottom of the table and you're playing against the best forwards in the world.
Brighton was second best. We got a result against Newcastle. Still no Evan Ferguson though.
No, and that would be a worry, Ruby, but look at the form Welbeck is in. It's unbelievable, isn't it? And João Pedro to come back as well.
Ferguson's getting a bit of game time, but he just needs that goal. He needs that just...
an impact. He needs something to kind of, almost to... like what we're saying with Duff getting the victory on Friday night. They just need something to turn for them, yeah.
Pressure on Eddie Howe?
I think Eddie Howe is a very good manager and they played very well, Newcastle, to be fair. But you look at Brighton's manager sitting in fifth position as well. I think he's younger than both of us, is he, Shane?
He is actually. That's actually a scary yeah, thought. On that scary thought, Alan, I thought we were going to leave on a positive note.
Villa, Unai Emery, brilliant again.
Smashing.
And Everton, 8 points in the last 12.
And there's a man who I've always admired, Ruby, and regardless people say the football he plays, but Sean Dyche, whether it's up, down, points, when they're losing, he always stays the same. So calm, so measured, so balanced. Blocks out the noise and he answers in stuff like that, and I think he's a brilliant manager.
Just your word on Villa, good manager, best goalkeeper in the world as well.
Yeah, brilliant
so,
he is, yeah.
On that note, Alan Cawley, thank you as always.
Thanks, lads.
We shall chat to you later in the week. We're taking a short break then, we're chatting rugby. We're going to hear from Orgy Snyman to chatting to Michael Corcoran, and Stephen Ferris is on the line. Now we're turning our attention to rugby and we're going to hear from Orgy Snyman, who was speaking to Michael Corcoran earlier today.
Can I talk to you about how the season has gone for you so far? I mean, it's been a pretty frustrating couple of years, hasn't it? Now you're playing rugby on a regular basis. You're injury-free, thankfully, touch wood, and you're playing with a smile on your face. It must come as almost a relief, if you understand.
Yeah, there is a bit of relief, obviously, in it, but I don't think that's the way I see things at the moment. It's more just appreciating being out on the field and enjoying every single second you get out there, you know, and making the most of it.
And that's what you're certainly doing. I mean, can I ask you about your decision to sign for Leinster? I mean, you were with Munster for a period of time. That was an injury hit campaign, if you understand what I mean. A rather frustrating time for you.
Yeah, obviously my time with Munster didn't go the way I really wanted it to go, you know. But I had a great time there and got to know everyone there really well and really enjoyed living in Ireland. And then when the opportunity came about to then sign for Leinster, yeah, it was a pretty easy decision to make because it's one of the best clubs in the world and it's such a great opportunity for me to be part of this setup and to grow my game further. So, and then obviously we get to stay in Ireland. My wife's quite happy here. She has a job here as well, so it was a pretty easy transition for us. So happy we made the move.
And a good settling in period for you given the fact that the last two games have been interprovincial games and you know exactly the intensity and rivalry they bring out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's obviously how it will always work out, you know. You play against Munster, one of my first games back, so that's usually the way things would turn out and would happen. But yeah, it was such a great game to be involved in, and especially in Croke Park, it was such a special occasion. I think it was a sellout crowd and a record-breaking crowd, and that in itself is something special. But I think the rivalry between Munster and Leinster even brought out even more, you know, from the people there and the fans, and as well as the players. Everyone was on top form that night.
You must have been really looking forward to that game specifically, but to get the bonus point try just before half time must have been something amazing.
Yeah, it was nice, and I think that's always the case if you play against people you know and friends. There's always a little bit extra in it. It's just a matter of respect and earning the respect of those guys that you have played with for so long, you know.
So there will be a bit of familiarity about this weekend. The Lions, the South African team, who like Leinster are unbeaten as well.
Yes, of course, and I think the Lions, what they're doing is exciting, and they had a good run to the start of the season, and yeah, obviously they have some exciting players, some guys that loves to run with the ball and make some good plays. So it's going to be an exciting game this weekend.
Can I ask you your impressions of Leinster as a whole? I mean, you will have known, obviously, the Irish international players, but I just saw Sam Prendergast walking down the stairs. Maybe, you know, people like that who are the next boat or wave of players coming through, and the standard and quality what they bring.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to see the amount of talent that is in the Leinster setup, and that goes from I couldn't really figure out who was in the academy and who was senior players when I first got here, because I feel like there's not a big difference in the guys and how they approach the game and how they look at it and how they prepare. So it's exciting being part of a system where anyone can kind of slot in, and the next guy up, even though he might be a youngster, is probably someone that in the future will play big rugby.
So it's 2 tries in 2 games. I mean, if you're involved this weekend, you're on a bit of a streak at the moment.
Yeah, I'm more looking for the assist, to be honest. I'm not really that interested in scoring tries, but whenever the ball pops up right for me and it's right there, I'll dot the ball down.
It's taken RG Snyman a while to make an impact in Irish soil, Stephen Ferris. By God, he's hit the ground running lately.
Yeah, he sure has. Unbelievable. Like, I think a lot of the credit has to go to the man himself for getting himself fit, firing, and having the backing of Leo Cullen and the rest of the Leinster boys. I think even at the tail end of last season, he was being used an awful lot off the bench. I know he has the reputation of being a part of that bomb squad that has been so destructive for South Africa over the last few seasons, but I think he's shown his quality in getting a couple of starts and what he can bring to the table when the first whistle goes. So yeah, huge credit for getting himself fit, and he's obviously surrounded by quality players in Leinster, as he is in South Africa. But he's just feeding off the confidence that's running through the Leinster veins at the minute, and he's playing some unbelievable rugby. Just, I know you maybe touch on it, but some of the offloads, and every time he gets the ball, you have to expect it. You know, as soon as he goes into contact, or even pre or post contact, he's got the skills to be able to get that ball away to a runner that's coming onto it at a pace, or up off the floor, or around the corner, or over his head. Like, he does have so many quality attributes with the ball in hand. But yeah, he's the interesting one is now when James Ryan and the rest of the boys are fit in the second row. Like, does RG Snyman play? Does he start? Does he come off the bench? It's a brilliant problem to have, isn't it?
A brilliant problem for Leo Cullen. I'd hate to be one of the other second rows or locks in the Leinster squad thinking I was going to get his place. I'd say that's going to be a fair challenge, but hey, competition makes it great. Leinster were very good at the weekend, but you kind of have to give Connacht some credit, Stephen. They didn't lie down.
No, they didn't, and they're never going to lie down at home, are they? But I think this is just from watching on the TV, it feels like it's not the same raucous atmosphere at the minute. And I know a lot of that's down to the changes, obviously, at the stadium there in the sports ground. There's a new stand getting put up. It's a limited crowd that are being brought in. So it doesn't feel like there's the same ferocity in the crowd when they decisions go against them, and there was a few decisions that maybe went against them the other night, but Leinster were top quality, finished off some cracking tries. I think that the one with the RG Snyman offload, and then they were able to get it out the width, and Turner ran it in the corner. Just unbelievable. Their speed of ball is off the charts. Connacht were half decent. I think Ioane at out half is either so good, or I think another two kicks missed a touch at the weekend. He missed a crucial one against Ulster. He missed a crucial one in the first game, if you can remember, back against Munster, to give themselves a chance to go up the other end of the pitch and get something out of the game. And Jack Carty's sort of waiting in the wings, isn't he, to come back in and recapture some of the form that he maybe showed a few seasons ago. So now we'll wait and see how that pans out. But Connacht are a half decent side, and they'll be disappointed that they didn't make it a closer game against Leinster. But some of the players, even Sean O'Brien in the back row, has come of age for Connacht, really outstanding player. So there's a few guys there that they can build around, and when Bundy, Aki, and Mac Hansen and a couple others start firing, then hopefully they'll get a few more wins under their belt.
I'm conscious time is somewhat against us. We talked about RG Snyman, but talk to me, Stephen, about Jacob Stockdale really looking like he's back to his best.
Yeah, there's been some reports this week that he's come out and said that he's just focusing on some of the things that he used to be able to do really well, instead of focusing on, oh, you know, this part of my game isn't great, I'm going to have to make that better. You know, what part of your game is really good? Can you make it excellent? Can you make it world class? And he has been one of the standout players for Ulster. The last couple of games has went really well for him. He hasn't had to do that much defending, in all seriousness, because of the opposition, but he's been recapturing some of the form that he showed back in 2018, which feels like a million years ago now. But yeah, he's a quality operator, a serious athlete, and you know, Ulster need to get the ball into his hands as often as they can on the big nights. And a bit like Connacht, you know, I think they'll struggle when they go away from home with just the depth of the squad that they have, but one man that can certainly pull a rabbit from a hat and score tries from anywhere is Jacob Stockdale, so hopefully he keeps in form.
Well, with a bit of luck, he will. Stephen, we are, I'm afraid, out of time. We've got to run away with ourselves in the new GAA rules, but also do sit in the fifth in the URC table. Munster down in 11th after a defeat to the Stormers at the weekend. So we will catch up again next week. Stephen Ferris, thanks for taking our call.
We will have more rugby discussion throughout the week here on Game On. Austin O'Malley, Paul Corey, Mark Langdon with us tomorrow. Massive thanks to Mary Elizabeth and Ronan for working on this evening's show. Bennett De Silva is back in the new music show. We've already delayed him by a minute and a half, so apologies, Bennett, but do stay tuned to 2FM. Myself and Ruby will chat you here at 6 o'clock tomorrow.